Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast. I hope you guys are having a great week. We are heading into a pivotal weekend in the NFL. We're going to talk about it. We just left a pivotal weekend, a most celebratory, and just I'm over enthused, and I've been waiting for this show, BK, for the two Buckeye fans to be able to truly make everyone who is not a Big Ten or Buckeye fan sick. OH!
IO!
Yes, sir! We did it, buddy. We did it, buddy. We'll get into a whole bunch of good stuff, but at first, quick reminder. We are on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's The Gospel STP. I'm your host, Zay, the fantasy football fiend himself, and my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, everyone. Great to be back.
So, we are going to start out with the good word of the week. BK, what we got up first?
Yeah, so one of my favorite weekends in the sports world, NFL conference title preview. We got the Bills and the Chiefs and the Commanders and the Eagles. How do you see these going and who you got?
I see Kansas City, and I'm hoping, I'm wishing, I'm praying that the carriage doesn't turn back into a pumpkin this weekend. I am on board with Washington. I am on board with Jayden Daniels. They can put up points against just about any defense. But there's certain teams whose makeup just don't make a great matchup for you. And that's what I kind of feel like the Commanders are going to run into with a familiar foe. Very close game. But I have Philly edging it out.
So, little fun fact, road teams in the postseason are 2-8 this year. Guess, Zay, who those two wins belong to?
The two teams still in. Washington and, well, Washington and Buffalo.
I'll make it even easier.
Washington and Washington.
Just Washington.
I was about to say Washington and Washington.
They won at Tampa Bay. They won at Detroit.
That's right. Buffalo hasn't played away from home yet. That's right.
They got the home game against the Ravens. So,
trick question, BK. I don't like it.
I'm just making sure we're all in the frigid cold here in South Carolina. Not quite like Destin or Pensacola, where they got, you know, 8 inches of snow.
Man, but iguanas were falling from the sky.
But we were going through it this last few days here in the frozen tundra of Lexington here. But so just want to make sure you're all awake and all that stuff. But, you know, I'll have a lot more to say about the who I think will win later on, so you know what that means. But just a few in general thoughts. What's interesting about Buffalo and Josh Allen is they're 4-0 in the regular season against Mahomes. Josh Allen has more wins against Patrick Mahomes than any other quarterback. However, he's 0-3 in the playoffs against Mahomes, which is when it matters most. And we know how hard it is to beat Andy Reid and Mahomes in the postseason when they're at home. So very interesting matchup there. Just a little nugget to whet your appetite. In the Washington thing, so it's tough because for 2 months I've been telling all of you guys, friends, family on the show, the two most talented rosters are Kansas City and Philadelphia. They were my Super Bowl pick for 2 months. It hasn't changed. In terms of there's no reason to pick against those two teams now. They're at home with the better roster and a great chance to advance. However, there are some things in Washington's favor, right? They have the better quarterback, much better quarterback. Number two, they're a confident team. Philly, 14-1 in their last 15 games. Do you know that who that loss was to? No, that's right, Washington. Yes. So, and you can say that Hurts got hurt and all those things, and that's fair enough. But you blew a 2-touchdown lead on the road. You had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, couldn't get it done. I say all that to say that the Eagles have some definitive advantages. that much like Kansas City, they have a distinct home field advantage. This is not the friendly, non-intimidating confines of Tampa Bay or Detroit. And for those of you who said Detroit had a home field advantage, please stop. Please stop. You're inside in a dome in a team that isn't used to winning anything. Please stop. Kansas City, Buffalo, and Philly are very difficult places to play. It's a hostile crowd. They're used to winning. And by the way, oh, there's weather. The one thing that the Commanders struggle the most with is...
I know it's just struggling the most with.
is teaming. It's the only time I call them the Commanders. For those of you out there, that's not their real name to me. So I apologize for those of you out there. Nevertheless, I'll do my best to not mess it up the rest of the way. But here's what I'll say. The biggest weakness of Washington is stopping the run. Besides their defense, what is the biggest strength of the Eagles? Barkley.
Right? Absolutely.
Barkley is a beast. And so having to try to figure out an answer to Barkley that's going to be a problem. So we'll talk about my picks later, but those are kind of how I see the mini breakdown as we start this week's show.
Okay. I'm not mad at it.
Number two, which of the four quarterbacks this week on Sunday can change their narrative the most? Mahomes, Allen, Daniels, or Hurts?
See, it depends on how deep I get with this question, BK. Philosophically speaking, Patrick Mahomes can't change much at all unless he wins a Super Bowl, because then he changes the narrative from this guy could be the next GOAT to this guy did something the GOAT didn't do, and now it's time to put him in the living legend conversation. But that doesn't happen this weekend, so I can't give it to Patrick. Josh Allen, he can add a lot of cachet to his name by taking out the foregone conclusion. The championship has already gotten their name etched on it, Kansas City Chiefs. If he can take them out, especially on the heels of getting rid of what everyone thought was his best wide receiver and was, but take it to the next level in a more is less type of a scenario, that's pretty big. That's major. For Jayden Daniels, you and Vander are the football almanac. I know there isn't a rookie that's ever won a Super Bowl. Is there a rookie that's ever gotten to a Super Bowl? I don't think so.
No.
So to be the first to ever do something, that means he can do this weekend for his legacy what Mahomes can't do until the Super Bowl if he makes it there. The person with the most to lose is Jalen Hurts. He's going against a young gun in his own division. If you beat Washington, it's a well you were supposed to. If you lose to Washington, it's a do we need to blow up the Eagles situation. So I don't think Jalen has anything at all to gain this weekend. He's in the same boat as Patrick Mahomes, but for very different reasons. So the two that I think have the most to change to their narrative over this weekend is going to be Jayden Daniels and Josh Allen. And the biggest one out of those two is Josh Allen, only because Jayden Daniels' narrative isn't being changed as much as it's being created because he's a rookie. So Josh Allen is really the one who can change his narrative the most this weekend.
Yeah, very interesting. So, you know me, I like to give my little stats and figures. So we're going to go into the BK Almanac here and throw out a few little fun stats here. So Mahomes, 3 Super Bowl titles. This is his now 7th straight AFC title game. Josh Allen, this is his 2nd AFC title game, including this year. He's 7-5 overall in the playoffs, but 0-3 against the Chiefs. Daniels obviously trying to be the first rookie to ever make the Super Bowl. And Jalen Hurts, 4-3 in the postseason. Here's a stat that will blow your mind. He's 4-0 when he throws for under 250 yards and winless when he throws for over 250. His postseason stats, 7 touchdowns, 2 picks, 1,346 yards. This is his second NFC title game, and he does have a Super Bowl appearance, which was a losing effort to Mahomes and the Chiefs. My answer to this for this weekend, right? Because the question kind of limits it to this Sunday, right? So based on the wording, to me, it's simply Josh Allen. He hasn't made it to a Super Bowl. He hasn't been able to beat Mahomes when it matters. 0-3 in the playoffs. 0-1 in the conference title games. No Super Bowl appearances. This is his chance to get there. He would tremendously change people's perspective of him if he could get to the Super Bowl, especially knowing who he's beaten. It's not like he's beating Baltimore to get to the Super Bowl or Pittsburgh or Denver. He's beating the two-time defending champions on the road to get there. That would erase a lot of doubts. The person that I think has the second most to change the narrative is the person most in danger of losing their job, which is Jalen Hurts. You know, the verdict's still out on how well he can play quarterback. Of the 4 quarterbacks, he's the only game manager in the conference title games. The other 3 are game changers. He's a game manager. He threw for 130 yards against the Rams. Now, I know he ran for 70 and a touchdown, so I know that he does more than just throw the ball. But he is not a difference maker on the field. They win because they got a top 3 defense, and they have the best running back in football, in my opinion, in Saquon Barkley. So his job is to manage the game and not beat them. Can Kansas City, Washington, or Buffalo win these games if those quarterbacks just manage the game?
Nope.
It's not going to happen. So, without a doubt, it's Josh Allen. But I do think that Hurts would be second for me, only because if he takes this team to his second Super Bowl, I think that kind of validates what he means to the team. Even though he won't.
Does it though?
Well,
if he goes out there and is mediocre and Saquon Barkley essentially wins them the game, do you think he'll get credit?
Barkley and the Eagles defense will get the credit. But I think and justifiably so, in the pecking order like I outlined, he would be third on that list, right? It would be defense, Barkley, or Barkley and defense, depending on how the game goes. Probably Barkley in the defense, knowing what they'll need to do to beat Washington. But I say that to say that if you take your team twice to the Super Bowl in less than 5 years, I can't, and you're the quarterback, and we know the quarterbacks tend to get the credit and they tend to get the blame. I have a hard time just ignoring the fact that he took a team and quarterbacked a team twice to the Super Bowl, even if they lose for the second time in the Super Bowl and he goes 0-2. I just feel like you can't ignore that.
Not mad at that. Only one team can win the Super Bowl, but being able to say that you made it to the big game twice, I think that takes away what Lamar Jackson is experiencing. You can't have that conversation about Hurts at that point, which is saying a lot.
And the other thing, Zay, too, right, is, you know, we say this in sports all the time, and I'm going to sound like a coach for a second, but winning is hard. And anybody can say a quarterback was lucky to get there once. I'm not sure you could say if Hurts does it twice within 5 years, you can say he got lucky twice. You know, like, it's hard to invalidate him as much. Or as you like to say, you'd have to, you know, show him some flowers for that point, for that.
you'd have to poo-poo a lot of other quarterbacks that no one wants to in order to say anything about him at that point. So,
right.
What we got next?
So, still in the NFL, who or what's to blame most for the Ravens' crushing loss to the Bills?
I mean, there's a couple different ways to look at it. You can do the 1+1=2 game and say, well, the guy that didn't hold on to the ball for the 2 points that would have made it a tie game is to blame. And I can see that school of thought. You can also say that, you know, the quarterback throwing an interception and fumbling the ball, you can say that those two turnovers are worth 2 points. You can say that if the defense doesn't allow the other team to put up 30 points or close to it, it'd make it a lot easier for us to win the game. You can also say that the play calling wasn't necessarily hitting on all cylinders at all points in the game as well. So I think there's enough blame to go around without just singling out a particular person or group for the loss. I can even go as far as saying is the game would be a whole lot easier if your Pro Bowl wide receiver Zay Flowers was out on the field, which he wasn't out there at all, and you only lost by two. First Pro Bowl wide receiver with the Ravens for quite, I think, in Lamar's tenure. But there are a lot of different reasons I could give, but the captain, you know, goes down with the ship, and if everything goes great, the captain's the first one with the pat on the back. And if everything, you know, if the ship runs aground, the captain is the first one to be, you know, ridiculed. So with that being said, got to put it on Lamar's shoulders just because he's the captain of the ship. Now, you can go the direction of saying, you know, the coach is the captain and the quarterback is the, you know, XO to the CO, if you will. But on the field, when you're in the thick of it, the quarterback is the captain. So that's where I got to put it, because if they had a one, I wouldn't have been put. I mean, you barely run the ball. I mean, no, it's coaching, it's play calls. You got to run the. Would you bring Derrick Henry? This is the game you brought Derrick Henry in there for. I don't care what his average yards per carry, you keep giving him the ball. You keep running the option and letting Lamar figure it out between him and Henry, and whatever else you get in there, you get in there. But there was not enough run plays called. Not when you have those two, the tandem of those two guys on the field, which would have kept the other team off the field. Like, I don't know. I was disappointed all the way around with the Ravens in this loss. What you got?
So I think there's four things to blame.
Okay.
I'm going to nail down the biggest one at the end. But Mark Andrews, obviously, the fumble and the botched 2 point. I mean, look, I don't usually say this, but I would have easily caught the 2 point pass. Like, you can't drop that ball. That's the easiest reception that you could ever have. Outside of the Hail Mary that Washington caught to beat the Bears. Now, that's the second easiest ball I've seen all year to catch. I don't want to hear it's cold and all that other garbage. Catch the ball. Number two, Lamar Jackson. Two costly turnovers. You can't do that in big games. Three, the play calling, right? Here's the thing. We talked about it on the last show where I said no one wants to tackle Derrick Henry. But do you really want to tackle Derrick Henry, who's a beast, when it's frigid cold outside for four quarters? Does that really sound like a fun day? Why are we not running him the ball? Like, how does he not? Like, what are we doing? So, and the sad thing going back to your defense point is, the Ravens gave up 27 points and Josh Allen didn't even throw for 140 yards. So Allen had a mediocre at best game and you still lost because you couldn't stop turning the ball over. You beat yourself. So at the end of the day, if I were to blame one thing, it's the most important thing in any football game, but even more so in the postseason, it's turnovers. Ask the Rams, ask the Lions, ask the Ravens. You're home because you didn't protect the ball and the other team didn't turn it over. The Eagles didn't turn it over. They won. Washington didn't turn it over. They won. The Bills didn't turn it over. They won. It's that simple. Don't beat yourself. That's who's to blame. You got to protect the ball. And just for the record, I'm not going to get into this whole big tangent because we're going to talk about it a little later. But please stop with the weather. Philly had to play in the snow and cold. Buffalo had to play on that frigid field too. And look, I know Baltimore's not Buffalo, but Baltimore's certainly not Miami or LA. So get out of here with, come on, protect the ball. That's all you got to do. Hold on to the ball.
So, a little bit of a discussion here. And give us a moment, okay, good people? Give us a moment. Let us just pontificate here for a second. When looking at the road to the championship that our Buckeyes had to take, would you say that it's the most impressive ever? Would you say it's the most difficult ever? How would you surmise the road that the Buckeyes had to take to get to the first inaugural 12-team playoff championship?
That's a great question. I think for me, I would say that it has to be the most impressive road to a title ever. And I say that because they had to win more games than ever been done before. So in most recent years, you've had to win two games. They had to win four. Mm-hmm. In the quality of those wins, an undefeated Ducks team, I don't care about Tennessee. Sorry, Knoxville fans, but get out of here. Okay. Congratulations, you made the playoffs. The bad news for you is you're getting a Buckeye beatdown, which is what you got. So congrats on your playoff run. If the Rock was there in Columbus at the Horseshoe, they would have called it the Rocky Bomb instead of the Rocky Top. But nevertheless, for all you wrestling fans out there, you'll appreciate that later. But nevertheless, Oregon undefeated throughout the regular season, won the Big Ten, beating the Ducks. Then they had to beat Texas, who was a top three team most of the year. Then had to beat Notre Dame, who had won, 13 in a row and just hammered everybody since the Northern Illinois loss. You beat those teams, and all of them by double figures is very impressive. I don't know how one can legitimately say that you won more games in the playoffs than anyone else, and the degree of difficulty and who you had to play, and playing in all these different venues back to back to back, I don't know how you would argue anything other than it wasn't the most impressive.
Honestly, BK, I don't think it was the most impressive. I think it was the longest. There's something to be said for that. Until next year when someone has to win the same amount of games and the year after that and the year after that and the year after that, unless or until they change it to 16 teams. So just inherently speaking, it is definitely the longest, and the fact that you made it through the gauntlet and were the first team to be able to do so, that should give you a pat on the back end of itself. But as far as most impressive or most difficult, the only reason I wouldn't put that moniker on there is because Oregon was good all year. Texas was pretty good. But these are teams that we saw flaws in for most of the year and spoke up about the flaws that we saw. There have been teams in the not too distant past that we just looked at as if every single starter on that team should be playing somewhere in the NFL by this time next year. I mean, that's the way we felt about some of these teams in the past. So going through, I honestly think Ohio State winning the first playoff was more impressive than this run. Cause, and it's not Ohio, it's not that side of it. This is going to sound real bad, BK. So I'm going to let you take the mail this week. But I just didn't have very much respect for the other teams they had to go through. I wasn't very impressed by Texas. Texas should have lost like their last four games. They couldn't even figure out who they really wanted to have at quarterback. And you said for like the last 6 weeks, Quinn Ewers isn't right. He's not 100% healthy. He's given 100% effort, but we aren't seeing from him what we've seen before. I feel like we should have beat Oregon the first time, and we would have if Ryan Day wasn't playing scared for the first half. Like, these are teams that I went into each one of those games overly confident, which is not what you tend to hear from me as it pertains to any of my teams. So when you go into every game feeling as if there's no way this team can touch me, I guess it depends at the end of the day on your definition of impressive. Because if you feel like no team can touch you and no team touches you, that's actually pretty impressive. But it's also impressive when you can beat teams that no one thought you could beat. So I guess it depends on just which spectrum plays out to mean more to you personally. The idea of we beat a team that we weren't supposed to beat, or the idea that we knew we were going to beat them going into it, and we did. So for me, it was more impressive when we won a championship that most people didn't think we could, versus knowing when this thing started out, no matter how this ends, Ohio State has the best chance. So does that distinction make sense?
It does. So I'm sure you saw the smirk. So here comes what I'm going to say about this. I've been saying this for weeks, and you and I have talked about this privately, publicly, and all kinds of things. What was the biggest challenge for Ohio State in the postseason?
Ryan Day.
The fact that they had to run the gauntlet and win four playoff games over highly ranked teams with him as coach, and somehow navigate him not effing up four games, any of the four games, makes it the most impressive. Because the other teams weren't going to beat Ohio State. You had to worry about your coach beating you because he's good at doing it. So you had to overcome yourself. That's the hardest challenge. So from a talent perspective, Texas didn't have the talent. Texas has a very good team. They're a flawed team, but a very good team. Oregon's a very good team. They have some flaws. Notre Dame has a lot of flaws, which we saw on Monday night. Hence, they were down 31-7. You know, the talent was nowhere near the same. It was not even close. So give Notre Dame for cosmetically making it more competitive at the end once the game was already over. But the game was over. So, you know, congrats on, again, cosmetic scores.
I'm mad at that.
Makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We ready for the tweet?
I'm not going to agree with you on every topic, BK, even if I have to do it on purpose.
What do you want me to say? It's BK wins. All right. So the truth and nothing but the truth.
Yes, sir. Let's go.
So I am so excited for this first topic because I talked to my dad this afternoon. We usually talk Thursday afternoons, and I affectionately call him Papa Bear. And I actually gave him a Browns fun fact that he didn't know.
Okay.
90% of the time, he's the one giving me the Browns fun facts and knowledge that I share with y'all on the show. I like to call him the brains behind the Browns info. But in this case, Papa Bear got some information. Deshaun Watson. We may or may not have talked on the show for a couple months about how the Browns are going to find some way to get out of paying him. And sure enough, Deshaun Watson, if nothing else, is consistent in finding new ways to F up. On this segment of How He F'd Up, Deshaun Watson posted a video on TikTok dancing around with his girlfriend. You're like, well, why is that any bit of any news? Well, as part of his recovery and his contract, he's supposed to be in a protective boot at all times to protect himself from tearing the Achilles. He has not been wearing said protective boot, engaging activities he shouldn't be, and then later come to find out he tore his Achilles for the second time.
Yep.
Which would void his contract and save the Browns $92 million. What are your reactions? What are your thoughts and reactions to this? And what do you think happens next, Zay?
A fool and his money will soon part. Wealth without wisdom is a recipe for disaster. Deshaun Watson thought he was in a untouchable, I've gotten over on the powers that be type of situation. And I don't know this to be a fact, but I am 100% sure he has lived life as if every single penny of that $250 million contract was actually going to come his way. Let me explain a little something to you, right? There are a few things that people may not understand as far as athlete money is concerned. With athlete money comes athlete bills. Okay. You have an agent that's getting a percentage of what you get. You have the athlete tax, which is, yes, you get taxed based on just the money that you receive, but you're also taxed at the rate of the city you happen to be playing in any given Sunday. So if you're playing in New York, if you're playing in, you know, New England, if you're playing in California, a lot of these different places, you're coming up with a nice chunk of your check that you don't even see. You have a nutritionist, you have Uncle Sam, you have the people around you that don't understand that although you just signed a $250 million contract, 9 times out of 10, somewhere in the neighborhood of about $70 million of that, you will never actually see. And the way this works out is if you don't get that 92 and you were splurging at all on the first half of the money that you received, which I'm absolutely sure he did, by the time you pay property tax just for a few years for the homes that you own and the cars that you own, if you're no longer having a check coming in because no other team wants to take a chance on you, and now you are out of $92 million that you thought was going to be coming in, you went from being in hog heaven to having financial issues because the bills don't change just because your income did. So not only not to have another contract, which could be possible, somebody may take a chance on you, but it's not going to be anywhere close to what you're making right now. So he better strap up those boots and get a financial planner in front of him today, because there's no way, if I'm the Browns, I don't figure this out. There were a lot of other, you know, avenues that people were looking at and speculations as far as someone else, the other young lady that came out and was in the case. I guess she got paid off. That story went away. But this, I don't see how the Browns lawyers can't take advantage of at the end of the day. And it's not like he was producing well enough to try to figure out a way to not do it. I take the $92 million that he's owed, give it to Sam Darnold, and let's keep it moving. I'm drafting a quarterback of the future.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for Watson is, for me, big picture, I wonder, is this the end of his career as we know it? And I say that because he hasn't been relevant on the field since the end of 2020. So now we've gone through 4 football seasons. He's going to miss what? All, if not most, of next year. So now he's not played football for 5 years. Let me phrase that. He's either not played or been awful for 5 years. Like, I'm not really sure who's really looking to. 5 years is a long time. Like, so, you know, but again, he did it to himself, so he's got no one to blame. But, you know, so I'm not feeling sorry for him, but I do think it's probably the end for him. Moving on. Should all NFL postseason games be played in ideal weather? While turnovers were the biggest factors in ending the Lions, Rams, and Ravens season, I've heard people argue that the cold and snow very much impacted Ravens. What do you think about that?
It's football. Get over it. Move on with life. We got teams building new stadiums without a dome. What does that tell you? In most of those, magically, most of those teams that are building new stadiums without a dome are in cold weather locations. Figure that one out. Like you, if they didn't want to be in the cold, they didn't have to be. If you have to play that team, if you don't want to play in cold weather, then win your games if you're a warm weather team and you won't have to worry about it. Outside of that, no one's about to play in a venue like it's the NCAA tournament just so you can be warm. Like, no, that's a part of football. Like, adapt and overcome and keep it moving.
Well, I think the funny thing is that we talked about earlier, it's not like both teams don't have to play in this. Like, Buffalo's used to playing in the cold and snow, but I'm pretty sure that most of the players would rather play when it's 75 and sunny than 5 degrees outside in a foot of snow, right? Like, yep. I don't know too many players that would prefer the weather that they had to play in, but it's a huge advantage. You earn that advantage. That's why they call it home field advantage. Just like it's tough to play in Miami when it's 95 and sweltering heat.
And they got you in the sun while they're in the shade.
Right. Like they have all those fans blowing and they're all comfy with all that. And you're sitting there roasting. Like, so there's a reason why you have home field. Yeah, like you said, get over it. So Belichick recently said that the NFL should not allow teams to interview coaching candidates while those teams are still in the playoffs, as it distracts these playoff teams during their Super Bowl run. Do you agree? Should this rule be changed? Where do you stand on your former head coach?
If you're going to be a head coach, you might want to learn how to multitask. And if you're just coming up with what you're going to do now, you're probably going to lose anyway. So focus on the interview. People have to compartmentalize all the time. That's the way life works. Like me doing a job interview and no longer being able to do my job are two completely different conversations. It's not even me having to take a few moments of a day to think about the conversation that I'm about to have with someone that's going to maybe last a couple of hours. That's not going to make me not focus on the playoffs. It's just, I don't know, that it feels like more of a crabby old man type of, I mean, like, how would I say this? I don't know what the data would indicate as far as how often a team who had coaches being interviewed lost the next playoff game. I'd like to see that data. Maybe upon knowing that, I may change my mind, but no, I mean, it's not that deep. Humble opinion.
Yeah, for me, here's what I would say to it. I'm just going to be very blunt and concise about it. Here's the thing. As a head coach, you have to be able to multitask and be the CEO and wear a lot of different hats. And distractions are part of what you're doing as a head coach. There's always distractions. Front office, player, agent, all those things. Mm-hmm. If you can't handle it as a coordinator, how are you going to be able to handle it as a head coach?
Agreed. It's good practice at the end of the day.
That's the truth. So you and I always tackle tough subjects and topics. So I'm going to ask the question because I've actually heard this floated out in the media. So I'm going to take the opportunity to ask, how much does race play a factor in why Lamar Jackson seems to get criticized much more than Josh Allen?
I think race does have a low-hanging fruit effect, I'll say. But I'll also say, you have a two-time MVP that's won, two playoff games?
Three
playoff games. You have who could be a three-time MVP who's only won three playoff games, okay? I don't believe that most people believe that Josh Allen is as good as Lamar, which is actually surprising for some people because no one ever called for Josh Allen to not play a quarterback. The way Lamar started his career was with people telling him that he should be a wide receiver. So to take the drastic turns that Lamar has made in his game and in his growth and to not have more playoff wins behind it, I think deserves to be talked about a little bit more than a guy that is probably getting to just about the point that he should. The narrative that I would take is, unless you believe that Josh Allen is better than Lamar Jackson, which I don't, why wouldn't you think the fact that he's only won three playoff games is quite more alarming than the lesser quarterback? But is there an element of race? Sure. There's always going to be an element of race in ignorant people. I'm throw it out there. If that's the first thing that you go to, then yeah. And even when I say that, understand, when I say ignorant, it just means that you don't know any better. That's all. You're ignorant of the facts that will make your argument if you didn't choose race. That's what I'm saying. Because there is a way that you can go about making your argument about Lamar Jackson deserving the amount of talk that he gets that doesn't include race. And I just made that argument. So if you happen to be listening, do better. And I just gave you a much better argument than race. So run with that one. Josh Allen, I think he's pretty much gotten where he can get. I am legitimately surprised that Lamar hasn't gotten further. So that's the way I'll answer that. And I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. So I've given this question a lot of thought. And I think first and foremost, oftentimes in people's eyes, perception is reality. He came into the league, meaning Lamar, is a guy who was basically a running quarterback who occasionally threw. That was the perception of him. I'm not saying that's what I think. I'm not saying that that's factually true. That is the perception. Henceforth, why he was encouraged to play receiver, right? And early in his career, he wasn't very good at throwing the football. He really missed a lot of easy throws that kind of fed into that narrative. I'm going to give some stats before I can continue. So Josh Allen in his playoff career, which is 12 games currently right now, he's thrown for over 3,700 yards, 28 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, a passer rating of 101.4, and he's 7-5 in the postseason with now his second AFC title game. Lamar's playoff stats through 8 games, where he's 3-5, 1,753 yards, 10 touchdowns, 7 picks, 6 lost fumbles, a passer rating of 84.6, and 1 AFC title game. If I objectively, and we're professionals, right, Zay? As professionals, if I were objectively to compare, I would say people are much more impressed with how Lamar plays in the regular season than they are in the playoffs. His postseason numbers have not been good.
Nope.
When you have 10 touchdowns and 13 turnovers, I don't know how anyone thinks that you don't see Josh Allen with those numbers. You don't see Burrow with those numbers. You don't see Mahomes with those numbers. You don't see the upper echelon quarterbacks have that.
You don't see Hurts with those numbers.
Yeah. Like, and so I, and even Daniels has only played two playoff games, but the guy doesn't have a turnover as a rookie. So I sit there and I say to myself, for me, the criticism comes, you've won two MVPs, possibly three. You got a 50-50 chance of this being your third MVP. Okay. But in the postseason, when it matters most, you've let your team down, you know? And the truth is, I don't have an answer for why it keeps happening, because I think he's a great quarterback. You don't go 34 touchdowns and three picks in the regular season and not be a great quarterback. You'd be a fool to say anything other than that. No, I'm not even counting all the rushing touchdowns and rushing yards. I just looked at the passing part. Lamar Jackson had an MVP-like season. Depending on how you want to break it down, Allen, Lamar, and Barkley were the three best offensive players this year. I don't think there's any disputing that.
There might be a conversation for Ja'Marr Chase, the Triple Crown wide receiver, or his quarterback. Outside of those two, add it to the list. That's about it.
So for those, I would have those in my offensive player of the year.
Okay. I feel you.
I can't put them in MVP because...
They have each other?
Well, yes. They both directly rely on each other for success, and you didn't make the playoffs. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, if you were that great, you would have made the playoffs. So, not poo-pooing them.
But you couldn't even beat the Patriots.
That part. So, I don't believe that there's a race element here. I think there's a perception of how people viewed him when he came into the league, and people have a hard time erasing that initial perception that he was a running quarterback who happened to play quarterback or want to in their eyes. Again, 34 touchdowns, three picks tells me the man can play quarterback. For me, the criticism isn't going to change until you change the narrative and win playoff games. 3-5 isn't good enough. When you almost have as many MVPs as you have playoff wins, to your point, that's a problem.
That's true.
Well, what's on deck, Zay?
Well, we have a little top five all time of something. And this time it's apropos because it's winter activities, if you will. What do you do? The top five things you like to do in the wintertime. Number five for me is enjoy it not being spring or summer. Because I don't like sweating, I don't like bugs, and you get a lot of both of those in the state of South Carolina in the spring and summer. It's already what most people would consider summer in the spring here. And in the spring, it is the closest temperature to what I would consider the kitchen of hell being for about 90 days out of the year. So yeah, that's where we are with number five for me, just enjoying it not being spring or summer. What you got, BK?
So my number five goes back to my childhood. And I like to joke that I'm now allergic to the snow and cold. But that being said.
Yeah, you moved from Cleveland, buddy. You left that up there. When you came down here, you got 2 years of being in South Carolina before you being able to deal with that is gone.
There's a reason why I don't like the snow and cold, and there's a reason why I left, and it's not because I like the snow and cold. But By the way, it's hard to believe I'm a few months away of 10 years from being down here. And the more surprising thing is nobody sent me back. But that being said, I'm not encouraging that either. You guys are stuck with me. So, but nevertheless, tobogganing and sledding. Used to love doing that as a kid. I was going outside yesterday and I saw by our clubhouse kids sledding down the hill. And I was like, remember those days well. So tobogganing and sledding combined would be number 5. What you got for number 4?
Number 4 for me is actually probably a bit different than most others, but I don't understand why. Barbecuing. It makes sense to stand over a fire in the winter. I don't know what the heck you guys are doing in the summer when it's 100 degrees outside, standing over 500 degrees. That makes zero sense at all. My barbecuing months are from about November through March. After that, the bugs are back and I'm in the house. So barbecuing is one of the activities or one of the things I love most about winter.
So I love that. And I also have now learned your official dislike for bugs. Number 4 for me, playing football. As a kid, one of my longtime friends, Steve, he used to have this football tournament at his house every winter called Ice Bowl. And we used to play all these games over 2 days over the weekend in the frozen tundra of outside in Cleveland. It was so much fun. And I can tell you, that we would play Saturday and Sunday, and it took me till Wednesday before I could finally start to walk properly. That's how much my body hurt after 2 days of taking hits with no pads in the ice and cold and snow. But it was so much fun. And, you know, playing football in the snow is some, I love it. So that would be my number 4.
But yet people are ready to take that away from the professionals. If the kids can do it, the pros can do it.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, you're paying me $9 million or $20 million a year. I'll play whatever conditions you want, Zay.
All right, number 3 for me, one of my favorite things about the winter.
By the way, before you say number 3, can I just say, I need the people out there to know, I didn't mark Andrews any balls out in the snow and cold either. It came to me, it was in the hands. Number 3, let's hit us.
Number 3 for me. Soups and chili, which is kind of a soup, but it's kind of its own category of soup. But soups and chili, of course you can eat those in the summertime or springtime. It just doesn't feel the same. It's my favorite type of food. It's just something about a good chowder that just warms the soul when it's cold outside. Chili too. Shout out to Wendy's. I don't care what anybody says about you. I don't care if it's the old hamburger meat. The chili isn't good until it's a day old anyway. That hamburger meat is an hour old at the most. Keep doing what you're doing, Wendy's. You have one of the best chilies on the market, even better than most restaurants, in my humble opinion. And for those of you out there that didn't know it, you can order the family size chili, which gives you somewhere in the neighborhood like 8 large, and it's only like $14. It's not on the menu, but you can ask them for it and they'll give it to you. It's like a tub of chili and it'll last for like 2 or 3 days, depending on how many people to eat. I just figure I'd throw that out to the people. A little nugget.
I like
what it. You got, BK?
Number 3. Now we're going to start getting into the nitty gritty of what I like when it's in the winter. Relaxing in the hot tub. I hate the snow and cold. So to sit there in the hot tub is so relaxing. I can chill, relax, and forget about all of life's problems while I'm in the warm, comfy confines of the hot tub. Number 3, what you got?
Well, number 2 for me, sports. Just about every sport that I like to watch is on right now, or up until last weekend when college football ended, but this time of year, you get both the college and pro football, you get the NBA, you get the girls and boys college basketball. You just get a ton of sports all at the same time. You can kind of pick your poison. It's something to watch almost every day during this time of year. So sports, that's my number two.
I love it. Number two for me is planning a tropical vacation. If I have to be in the winter, I don't want to be there. So we're going to find somewhere warm to go where, you know, toes in the water, you know, something in the sand, as they say in the little country song, Zach Brown Band. So
for those basically what you're saying is the best thing about the winter is getting the hell away from it. That's basically exactly what you're saying.
We call addition by subtraction. So me not being there is my second favorite part of winter. What is your number one?
Number one for me, cuddling. In the summertime, cuddling can be a chore. It really can be. It's hot. You don't feel as inviting as when it's cold. It's like we need each other. These are two magnets that need to be put together in order for the overall best outcome for both of us in the wintertime. We want to be warm. We want to be toasty. It's the best of all worlds, cuddling in the wintertime.
I can't argue any of that, Say. So
number one for you, BK, round it out for us.
So very similar to what you said, number one for me is staying inside where it's warm and or cuddling. You know, like, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So great minds think alike. And I'd like to point out, shout out to you. We went through this whole thing and you didn't copy all my answers this week.
Well, you got me your answers a little late this week, so I wasn't able to copy. So do better, BK. That's basically what I'm saying.
This is why I can't have nice things, folks. This is Zay's way of letting you guys all know that I better get my act together. You might have someone else here doing this.
Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. So, BK, we are now back to the, well, almost back to the point where you're just picking random bets and getting it right. Because there's no more football. So we just got a couple of more weekends of crushing the NFL. But BK's best bets for this week, what are we looking at?
Well, last week, guys, we started the new year. I know some of you had doubts. How could he continue 2025 as hot as he left 2024? Last week was another undefeated week. Kansas City got it done. Washington easily got it done. The Buckeyes got it done. It was an undefeated weekend on BK's best bets, and we're going to do it again this week. Although, we're going to do it in a couple different sports. So, first and foremost, I know you guys most care about the NFL. So let's start there. Couple best bets. Kansas City -1.5 this weekend over Buffalo. Mahomes 3-0 over Josh Allen in the playoffs at home. They're a game away from chasing that three-peat. Do we really think Buffalo is going to come in on the road with that defense and beat Kansas City? I think not. Swifties, I want no hate mail. No hate mail. Kansas City is going to the Super Bowl for the third straight year. I like Kansas City to win there. I also have a teaser. We're going to go back to what I've been saying. Give me the Eagles money line. Kansas City +4.5 with that teaser, 6-point teaser. Philly will beat Washington to advance to the Super Bowl. In the Super Bowl that I've been saying for 2 months, it'll be the Eagles versus the Chiefs in a rematch from a couple years ago for the Super Bowl. I like them to win. However, good people, I will tell you, if the Eagles happen to lose, it'd be the happiest I'll ever be to lose a best bet. So please know this. But again, we don't bet with our heart. We bet with our heads. And the Eagles is the better play because they're at home, they have the better defense, and they have Saquon Barkley, and Washington can't stop the run. One other fun fact about the NFL, though, the four best teams at going for it on fourth down this year are the four teams remaining in the postseason. Just a little something to think about. Last but not least, as far as the best bets, we're going to go back to Zay's good old buddy, tennis. Because we're at the time of the year where he gets to enjoy new sports. So throughout the tournament, I've been riding Sabalenka and Djokovic. I feel like I've built enough equity to share the pre-tournament picks, even though the tournament's kind of gone on. So on the women's side, I had Sabalenka plus 150 to win. The reason being is because she's the two-time defending champion. She's been very tough to beat there. Plus 150 is good odds. And she is in the final against Madison Keys. They'll play at 3:30 in the morning our time, Saturday morning. No, I won't be staying up. That'll be a record. However, since the match hasn't happened because we're recording this at around 9 p.m. on Thursday evening, I have Sabalenka beating Madison Keys as a best bet to win her third straight Australian Open, or to stay along the theme, her version of the three-peat. I've been riding Djokovic. I had him as a best bet to beat Alcaraz. He did that in four sets. He dropped the first set and came back to win. His now 50th Grand Slam semifinal, which breaks Federer's 49. So that's an incredible stat. Djokovic has won 10 Australian Opens, 24 Grand Slam titles. He has a matchup against Zverev tonight, actually, in about an hour. I like Djokovic to beat Zverev and advance to the finals. By the way, Djokovic plus 300 to make the finals. I did that before the tournament. I also did another futures. I hedged my bets. Zay, you know I like my plus 700s. You could have Djokovic plus 700 before the tournament started to win it. I also have the top seed Sinner is also, he was plus 150 like Sabalenka. By the way, Sinner and Djokovic are in the semifinals. They don't play each other. It'll be Shelton versus Sinner and Djokovic versus Zverev. In either case, I hedged my bets there because I wasn't sure that Djokovic's health, specifically his knee and legs, would hold up in the heat. So I did take the top seed as well. Obviously, one of those will likely win and one of them obviously won't win. But truth be told, I'd much rather have the plus 700 because A, Djokovic is my favorite player, and B, you'd make more money. So those are this week's best bets. Chiefs minus 1.5. Chiefs plus 4.5. Eagles money line with the teaser. Sabalenka to beat Madison Keys to win her third straight Australian Open. Djokovic to win tonight, later tonight, to go to the finals. Cash that ticket, both the money line and going to the finals. And also Djokovic plus 700 to win and Sinner plus 150 to win are this week's best bets.
Yeah, I went ahead and put those in as you were saying them so I wouldn't forget. Look, I've lost more money this year than I've won, which I've won more money than I ever have by waiting until the last minute to put it in versus doing it immediately. So, yeah. I love you guys, but I love my money more, so I'm putting this in immediately.
Speaking of which, Dave, this is the one segment that might, despite my sending my stuff late to you this week, you know, because I got publicly scolded over here, you know, this is the one segment that will keep me coming back as long as I win.
Let's just say, pardon the pun, but it pays off. Just put it there. And let's go ahead and wrap the show up with our can't miss weekly rants. BK, you want to start out first this week or you want me to go first?
I usually go first, so I'm going to go first this week.
Okay, go for it.
And I'm going to tick off a lot of people when I say this. The media has been all over the fact that, you know, Texans players have complained. Everyone's complaining about how the fix is in and the refs keep winning it for Kansas City and how it's hard enough to beat Kansas City as it is when you have to deal with Reed and Mahomes and then you have to try to beat the refs too. I'm going to give you a two-word answer. Do better. Look, I'm going to give you a nugget, which I know initially is going to support the alternative, but here's the thing. In NFL postseason history, let me revise that. Teams were 40 9-0 all time in the playoffs when they outgained their opponents by over 100 yards and had no turnovers. The Texans outgained the Chiefs by 112 yards and didn't turn the ball over and still lost the game. Now, I know there were some questionable calls. The Mahomes phantom personal foul that where he barely got even hit. And there were some other calls that were sketchy at best. But you dominated yardage. You had no turnovers. And you still lost. You have nobody to blame but yourself. Like, you shouldn't be losing those games. The second thing is, I know that, you know, throughout the regular season, and I will get hate mail for this, and I'll bring it on. I know Kelce's been on tour with Taylor Swift and apparently boycotted the regular season because he finally showed up in the playoffs. But the guy was a monster in the playoffs. You might want to cover Travis Kelce in the playoffs. What are we doing? Like, and the fact is, the Texans even got the benefit of Mixon played. None of us thought Mixon was going to play, but he played. You were down your two of your best receivers in Dell and Diggs. Sounds like a law firm. But at the end of the day, guys, please stop with blaming the officials. At the end of the day, yes, does it? You have to adjust to the refereeing and how they're calling the game. You know that Mahomes tends, much like Brady used to, and people bemoan that as well. You have to adjust to who you're playing. If they're going to call it tighter on a player or a team, then you have to play smarter and not give them a reason to target you. Lay up, give them an extra yard, let them run an extra yard before he slides versus giving him 15 for hitting him late. Right? You got to play smarter. Don't beat yourself and stop blaming the refs. And that's the truth.
Well, BK, I'm actually going to go over to a little bit of round ball for my rant.
I love it.
Miami Heat. I need you to get it together because at this point, you just need to let Jimmy Butler go. This isn't a good look for the player or the team at this point. Pat Riley, bruh, like, you've run every star out of Alabama that has, excuse me, out of Miami that has ever been in Miami since your tenure there. Wade would have not retired as early. Shaq wouldn't have left. LeBron wouldn't have left. Like Jimmy's now about to go. Like, every superstar slash star you get there, you run out of the building with this curmudgeon type of attitude. You threw away LeBron's chocolate chip cookies on the plane. You said there were no cookies allowed on the plane. Like, bro, what are we doing? Like, I don't understand what it is you think you have in Miami or why you think it should be the destination of all destinations. It's not. It's not. It's never been. You got lucky and got Dwayne Wade there from drafting him. If not him, I don't know that you would have ever been what you were for a flash in the pan. You got to do better, bro. Like, maybe it's time for you to just ride on off into the sunset or take a different position or do something, but you're making yourself the Jerry Jones of the NBA. Obviously, you're not an owner, but you're making yourself bigger than the team, and it's to the detriment of the team. Like, just let Jimmy Butler go. The ship is sailed. The suspending him and taking his money for now, it's like up to $3 million. You're not helping yourself with the next guy that you're going to want to get in the building, that you're going to need to get in the building because Jimmy will no longer be in the building. Bam Adebayo probably isn't going to stay, or maybe he does because he's not a superstar, so he's willing to take the treatment that you give him because you're willing to give him max money. but figure something out, because this dog just don't hunt, and you're doing yourself more harm than good with what you're going to be able to do in the future of this franchise than the I'm going to prove a point just because I can type of scenario that you find yourself in currently. And that, my friends, is the truth and nothing but the truth. And
I actually disagree with you, Zay.
Whoa. Take the floor, BK.
So I agree with the prior players that you referenced. But in Butler's case, in Wade and LeBron, agreed. I mean, in LeBron's case, it was a simple thing of LeBron wanted Spoelstra fired and Riley wouldn't fire him. So, you know, that was that. But Butler is coming to the end of the road. He's always been a me guy, wherever he's been. He's unhappy.
To be fair, he's normally been one of the only guys on the team. I can't remember the last time that he actually had teammates that were actually consistent on a team that he was on. So he didn't have a choice but to be a me guy. He didn't have anyone else to turn it over to.
Well, but I mean, is he's a selfish person. Like he started even in Chicago, he was that way. In other Miami's been that way. In Philly, he was that way. He's a selfish Minnesota. He was that way. So here's the thing. He said he was going to join the team on the plane trip and then didn't make the plane trip. So they suspended him. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, I actually agree with Riley. Here's the problem. Here's what Butler needs to do. And I hope he listens. He needs to get his behind back to the team. He needs to play the rest of the year because he's under contract. Remember, this is what players forget. And this happens in the NBA more than any other sport. Players don't run the teams. The owners run the team. It's great that LeBron and all these players think they have opinions and have their opinions and want to do what they want. And LeBron's not the only one. I was the easiest one to pick. Butler thinks he's entitled to do whatever he wants. I'm going to demand a trade. I don't want to be here. Guess what? Nobody gives a damn what he wants. You're under contract. So guess what? You're either going to play under your contract or you're going to not play and we're not going to pay you. You'll be suspended without pay until you come and play. Those are your options. This is not a democracy. You have signed a contract. The contract was good enough to sign before. You can't pick and choose when it's convenient.
Well, you can take your non-democracy and see how many games you win with it. And I'll be out of here at the end of the year, regardless, as a free agent, and you'll get absolutely nothing. And I'm rich enough to not care how much money I lose just to screw you. That's pretty much where the two sides are now.
But I think at the end of the day, what they'll do is they'll make him what I would do is I would make him suffer through the year and then I would trade him in the offseason because he's still under contract.
And guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to sabotage every trade you try to make until I'm a free agent, because at this point I'm being spiteful and I don't want you to get anything out of it. Here's the thing. No one's going to pay top dollar for a guy that doesn't want to be there and everyone knows that you don't want him there. You've canceled your own trade ability. So just get rid of him. This is a bad relationship. And neither, I can't even say neither wants to be the first to say goodbye. Both are openly basically playing a game of chicken and saying, I don't want to be here. You don't want to be here, but the house is mine. Like that's essentially the game we're playing here. It's like, Just say, okay, we had a nice run and we were good for each other while we were, and let's move on with life now. Like that's the part that I don't get is the, I'm a man, hear me roar. But both sides are doing this whole, you know, let's see who can hurt each other the most. No, just let it go. And in the words of Frozen, let it go. Let it go. It's okay. Doesn't have to be cantankerous. The relationship is over. Let it be over. That's okay, BK. Because guess what? When you're publicly cantankerous with your current girlfriend, guess what the next one is already thinking? Ooh, so that's how you get when it's no longer rose-colored glasses, huh? I'm glad I got to see this side of you without me being the one that it's happening to. That's the bigger picture for the team that no free agent wanted to play for already. You got to think above. It's not even about Jimmy at this point.
Yeah, I can see that. I think the thing that surprises me is just how bad things have gotten so quick. Like, I guess I'm just really surprised that it got here. You know, I know I mentioned Butler's history. We know his public feud with Minnesota, and people close to him have said it's only going to get worse. You haven't seen anything yet. So, you know, and obviously they're both stubborn people, Riley and Butler. So when you have two stubborn forces, you know, neither one is, they've dug their feet in the sand and this is where we're at. But for me, I wonder why it got so bad for Butler. Because, I mean, the team isn't bad. They're not a contender, but they're not bad.
They're not a contender. That's bad. Like, what do you?
But where is he going to go that's a contender?
There's a lot of teams he can go to that's a contender. Like, all the contenders. Like, I mean, half the NBA is a contender.
We both know that not half the league is a contender.
The teams that are currently in the window to possibly grab his services are Milwaukee, the Suns, and it was one of the teams. It was one of the team. I can't remember which. They were all contenders as far as the teams that were currently in talks with Miami. But Miami's trying to sell him at full retail price, and they don't realize that they're now at the swap meet. Based on their public display of ineffection. Yep. Like, you can't give me full retail prices at the swap meet. Like, why would I pay full retail for a guy that you don't like and doesn't like you? And this relationship is going to come to a head one way or another very, very soon. I mean, I don't know. I would rather let it blow up in Miami than overpay at this point. Like, why would I do that? That doesn't make any sense for the other teams. So, but that pretty much wraps it up for this week. We will be back to you on Wednesday to have a full recap of the weekend that was. Again, remember, we are on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's at The Gospel STP. And we are on Facebook at The Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. Join, subscribe, follow both. Also, click that follow button on whatever app you may be using as far as listening to the podcast is concerned. We appreciate every single one of you that do that. And I think sometime over the next couple of weeks, we'll discuss a little bit of a giveaway for those that have gone and followed and subscribed. We'll figure out something that we can do for the faithful listeners, some type of a, you know, I don't know. We'll figure out what that's going to be. But we do definitely appreciate each and every single one of you. But for this week, we are out. And remember, tell the truth.
Nothing but the truth. And hail to the Commanders.
Go Bucks.